Teaching English Today, The Four Seas and Beyond by Louise Carlton-Gertsch is powered by Ansklett Sprachen, der Verlag für modernes Fremdsprachenlernen in Schule, Ausbildung, Universität und Erwachsenenbildung. Sprachenlernen fürs Leben.
Hello and welcome to Teaching English Today, The Four Seas and Beyond, a podcast in which we'll be looking at ways to help students of English develop important skills for the 21st century. I'm your host, Louise Carlton-Gertsch. Today, we'll be exploring the idea of empathy as well as how we can practice it. And later in this episode, I'll be joined by the English teacher, Andrea Holler, to find out what she does to promote empathy in the classroom. In the novel To Kill a Mockingbird, Atticus Finch is talking to his young daughter Scout and says, "First of all, if you can learn a simple trick, Scout, you'll get along a lot better with all kinds of folks. You never really understand a person until you consider things from his point of view, until you climb into his skin and walk around in it." In so doing, Harper Lee describes a key component of empathy, perspective taking. Empathy is often confused with sympathy, pity, or feeling sorry for someone, but it goes far beyond this. Empathy has the power to affect far-reaching social change. Over the past decades, there's been a surge of interest in it, as political leaders, CEOs, marketing experts, and many more have recognized its power. In fact, neuroscientist and professor of psychology at Cambridge University, Simon Baron Cohen, has said that empathy is one of the most valuable resources in our world. In his book, 0 Degrees of Empathy, he writes, "Empathy is like a universal solvent. Any problem immersed in empathy becomes soluble." But what exactly is empathy? In the second edition of the Encyclopedia of Mental Health, it's described as follows. Empathy, in the broadest sense, refers to an observer having some type of cognitive or emotional response to the experiences of another person. This is why researchers often distinguish between two primary types. Cognitive empathy, which is about the ability to perceive and understand another person's emotions, often referred to as perspective taking, so what Harper Lee was referring to. In this situation, we're able to imagine what the other person is feeling and understand that they have different tastes, experiences, and perspectives to ours. Affective empathy refers to the sensations and feelings we get in response to someone else's emotions, so a shared emotional response. For instance, if a person who's close to us is very distressed, and we then also feel distressed or sad, we're displaying affective empathy. It's almost as if their emotions were contagious. In his article, 6 Habits of Highly Empathetic People, in the magazine Greater Good, Roman Krznarek explores the features of highly empathetic people. The first habit is the cultivation of curiosity about strangers. Highly empathetic people have retained the natural curiosity of young children and are eager to ask questions to find out more about others. He explains that this doesn't refer to discussing superficial topics, such as the weather, but trying to see the world from their perspective. Habit 2 is challenging prejudices and discovering commonalities, so similarities. Many of us have a tendency to put people in boxes when we first encounter them. We judge people, even subconsciously, according to preconceived notions and make assumptions based on their appearance, how they speak, and so on. But highly empathetic people are able to challenge these preconceptions and instead look for what they have in common rather than look for differences. Interestingly, in 1986, the Guardian newspaper came up with a 30-second advert entitled Points of View that challenged people to get the whole picture before making assumptions based on stereotypes. Habit 3 is trying another person's life, so stepping into another person's shoes. He gives the example of Patricia Moore, a US product designer, who adopted a revolutionary approach to product design in the 1970s. Moore decided to truly immerse herself to simulate the sensory changes associated with aging and to gain insights into the challenges that the elderly face on a day-to-day basis. To this end, she dressed up as an 85-year-old woman, although she was herself only in her 20s. She wore thick glasses to blur her vision, put plugs in her ears so that she couldn't hear properly, taped splints to her arms and legs to hinder her movements, and wore uneven shoes so that she was forced to hobble. She spent 3 years travelling around the US in this disguise, riding on crowded buses, going up and down subway stairs, and trying to overcome everyday challenges. The result was that she was able to design innovative products that made life much easier for elderly people. It's an approach that's been adopted in healthcare and elderly care to this day, although it's not taken to such extremes. Habit 4 is listening hard and opening up. Highly empathetic people not only listen attentively to what people are saying, so practice active listening, but also endeavour to find out about the emotional state and needs of the person to whom they're talking. So they're tuning into the how and why. This is also known as empathetic listening. But at the same time, a conversation is an exchange of ideas, and so it's also about having the courage to take off our own masks and thus embrace our own vulnerability. He describes habit 5 as developing an ambitious imagination. Krznarik points out that empathy is not just reserved for those who are suffering or living on the margins of society. It's important to also try to empathize with those who have different beliefs or mindsets to ourselves. This will help to build tolerance and can lead to a better understanding of how to effect change, as we then might find more compelling arguments that will actually be listened to. And finally, habit 6 is about inspiring mass action and social change. Empathy has been used over the centuries to inspire people to effect change and has enormous potential. Of course, empathy is nothing new. It's something that's also deeply rooted in our brains. In fact, in the past, people often believed that empathy was something you were either born with or not. Research carried out by a team of Cambridge scientists in 2018 found out that how empathetic we are is partly down to our genes. But studies also suggest that we can actually improve our empathetic abilities through practice. In her compelling TED talk, The Power of Empathy, Harvard psychiatry professor Helen Reese describes the essence of empathy as being seen and heard and having our needs responded to. Following many years of research, she's developed empathy training to enable people in different fields to develop greater empathy. She discusses this in her book, The Empathy Effect, and highlights 7 attributes that are key, one for each of the letters in the word empathy. E is for eye contact. She talks about the importance of establishing eye contact with the person to whom we're talking to enable us to pick up on nonverbal communication and nuances that are not conveyed by a person's voice. M stands for muscles for facial expression. We're wired to mimic other people's facial expressions. When someone smiles, we generally smile back. But we can also tell if someone is genuinely smiling, so when the muscles around the eyes smile too, or if the smile is forced. If we're able to identify another person's feelings and mirror them, we're able to communicate our empathy in a nonverbal manner. Studies show that this kind of mimicry increases understanding and connection between two people. P is for posture. As we all know, posture is key to showing how we feel. If we're sitting in a slumped position, this can signal disinterest, boredom, or sadness. Sitting with our arms crossed can signal that we're feeling defensive or even confrontational. But when we sit up tall, which suggests happiness or confidence, face the person, or even lean forwards towards them, this indicates that we're open and can help to establish trust. A is affect or emotions. We need to pay attention so as to be able to gauge a person's emotional state. As humans, we're very good at assessing how other people feel. But as Reese points out, if we don't tune into this, we're unlikely to be able to communicate effectively. T stands for tone. According to Reese, this is vital as it conveys over a third of a person's nonverbal emotional content. She suggests generally matching the other person's volume and tone unless they're angry, when a moderate tone is more appropriate. This is, of course, also interesting for students in intercultural contexts and one that bears drawing their attention to in particular. H is hearing, and the importance of actively listening to the other person. But at the same time, listening without judgment. If a person is angry, it's better to take a step back rather than rising to the bait. As the author Steve R. Covey said, when you show deep empathy towards others, their defensive energy goes down and positive energy replaces it. That's when you can get more creative in solving problems. And why is for your response? This refers to how we respond to the other person, not what we're going to say next, but our response to their emotions, so how we mirror what they're feeling. And of course, all of these can be integrated into a classroom setting. To find out more about empathy in the classroom, I had a chat with Andrea Holler, an English teacher at the Oskar Maria Graf Gymnasium in Neufahrn.
I'm really very grateful to you that you've decided to come and have this chat with me.
Yeah, thank you for inviting me.
I think it's wonderful because you're in the classroom and you get obviously a very different perspective of things to what I get. A lot at the moment, people are saying that empathy is really, really important. It's an absolutely key skill. And I was wondering how important you think empathy is for the classroom.
So I consider it to be very important. As you've just said, it is one of the soft skills that our students should have. And this is why I really want to engage students in empathy in the classroom. And there are different ways to do so. But I'd say first and foremost, it starts with us, the teachers. And we should really be attentive listeners and take our students' needs seriously. And in that way, I'd say we can promote understanding, sensitivity, and awareness of those around us.
When you say attentive listening, can you explain a little bit more what you mean by that?
So it's really important when it comes to active listening to establish eye contact, to really concentrate on what your classmate is saying. And I definitely say students facing the front is hindering them from establishing eye contact. And so sometimes I'd say, let's just get rid of the desks or rearrange them. And we should come up with collaborative contexts. So, for example, I use the method of the double circle. Let me just explain that a bit, if it's fine by you.
Yeah, absolutely.
So students form an inner circle and an outer circle, and then they actually face each other. So a pair of them works together and interacts. And after a certain period of time, the inner circle moves clockwise. And so different students can interact then in these double circles.
How do the students react when they really do have such intensive eye contact with each other? Do they find it odd at the beginning?
I'd say no, because they quickly grow used to that method. And it's quite natural to really exchange ideas with a person. It's just not natural to face the front in the classroom.
That's a very good point. You're absolutely right. When we talk to people, we're generally looking at each other.
Yeah, and also try to mirror them a bit.
Yeah, that we mirror each other's facial expressions, don't we? So if
we
someone
do.
Else smiles,
we
then we tend to smile too.
We smile back.
Yeah, absolutely. It's obviously something that's not just important for the classroom in general, but I think empathy is something that's quite important for English language teaching, isn't it?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I'd say there is a major approach of combining teaching cognitive empathy, which is perspective taking, and the main aim of our intercultural classroom, which is intercultural competence.
Mm-hmm.
I'd even go as far as to say that cognitive empathy is the main prerequisite for intercultural competence. And in that way, it comes in quite handy to combine both aims. Let me just mention one idea. So why not teach about different codes of conduct that vary from culture to culture? And yeah, attitudes towards time, space, etc. So let's have students, for example, wait for the bus in a German classroom. Let's take that scenario. And of course, they are German teenagers, but one student should take on the role of a person from the United Kingdom who would definitely try queuing while waiting for the bus. And so the teenagers from Germany and that UK citizen should then lead a dialogue, what it means to wait for the bus in the UK in comparison to Germany.
That's a lovely idea, because I think it's something that's so central in many ways to who we are. We do it without thinking. But here in Germany, it's of course people queue, but it's a different, perhaps it's not the same cultural custom as it is in the UK.
Yeah, and maybe we would not take offense when someone is queue jumping.
Yes, whereas it's a cardinal sin in the UK.
Yeah,
absolutely.
That's the difference.
And that's actually a really nice idea, because I can imagine you can do that with younger students.
Yeah, and they love that idea.
Okay.
Yeah, and in order to promote empathy, I'd say that a very good approach would be using literature. Because already when we teach literature in the inverted commas classic way, when we teach about narrative perspective and point of view, students learn to experience reality through somebody else's eyes. Basically, literature provides a variety of social situations and conflicts that can again prompt discussions related to the character's feelings, for example, and also the student's personal emotions about the characters and conflict. I definitely use texts that present misunderstandings as a result of a culture clash. For example, I use the short story A Pair of Jeans by Shahrazad Qaisar, and it's given over to Miriam, who is a teenage Pakistani girl living in the UK. So to say, she's living between two worlds. And on the one hand, she's quite well adapted to Western culture, because she's influenced by her English friends at university and also dresses like them. But on the other hand, at home, her mother, Fatima, she accepts her Western way of life, but expects Miriam to stick to Muslim values when she's about to meet her future parents-in-law. And unfortunately, Miriam does not have the time to swap her clothes. So she's dressed in jeans when she meets her future parents-in-law. They are prejudiced because they consider Western clothes to be closely linked to feminist ideas and also rebellious behavior. So it triggers prejudices. And in the end, that really leads them to decide to cancel the marriage between Miriam and Farouk. And students can really concentrate on the intercultural conflict between Western culture and Pakistani culture. And then I use a creative approach, because students should also create inner views of characters that are not presented in the text. So if it's fine by you, I just mentioned the post-reading activities.
Yes, please do.
And there are three of them. So students should write an alternative ending to the story. Then they should imagine that Miriam and Ajoub, who is Miriam's mother-in-law, they are interviewed by a British journalist about their views on living in multicultural Britain, and they should write the interview. And last but not least, they should also step into Farouk's shoes and just imagine the situation when he hears about the cancelled wedding. So he confronts his parents, and students should write the dialogue between him and his parents. Yeah, that would be the inner view they have to fill in, and by stepping into Farouk's shoes and taking on his perspective.
And how do the students find something like this? Do they find it very easy to do, or is it something that they have to kind of practice doing this?
It depends on how well they can identify with the character, I'd say, yeah. This is a major point here, because I think it's easier writing the dialogue between Farouk and his parents, because that is closely linked to their personal situation a bit, so teenager parent conflict. On the other hand, the interview is a bit more challenging for the students.
Is literature something that you can do with the younger students too? I mean, obviously, there's so much literature to do with older students, but what about younger ones? How can you bring in this kind of literary and stepping into another's shoes kind of idea with the younger ones?
So there are easy reader versions of literature, which you can use. And stepping into someone's shoes, I think it's easier with the younger students in comparison to the older ones.
Why is that?
Because I'd say experience taught me that younger students are more talkative, they really like to express themselves, and they feel with the characters.
That's interesting. So it's almost something, is it something that students become perhaps more reticent about the older they get?
Yeah, I'd say so. So they feel like a bit embarrassed acting out a role play in front of the class.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was reading a really interesting idea the other day at the Empathy Museum in London. They have an exhibit where you can listen to the story of another person, so perhaps a refugee, somebody who's come, maybe an immigrant from a different culture, and you literally put their shoes on and walk around in their shoes as you're listening to their story. And the idea behind it is by putting on their shoes, it's bringing you a bit closer to their experience.
That's great, yeah. Mm-hmm. I like the idea.
I thought it was amazing too. And the founder, Roman Krasnarek, has had the idea of, you know, having a dressing up box so people can, for instance, dress up in the clothes of a cleaner or dress up in the clothes of maybe a nurse, just and then to actually try out what it's like being this person for a time. And it made me think that that would be a nice idea in the classroom too.
Yeah, absolutely. If you use prompts, I mean, students do like that. And I think it's quite helpful to really behave in character when you're wearing these kind of different clothes, etc. And there's just a thought that crossed my mind, because taking on another person's perspective, and I was thinking of a teenager who is physically challenged. So why not blindfold students to really find out what it is like to be in that situation, and then to feel with the teenager, the person who is physically challenged.
That's a wonderful, wonderful idea.
Yeah, it's like stepping into someone's shoes, as you've mentioned, the A Mile in My Shoes exhibition, in a different way. Mm-hmm.
There's a wonderful short video out there that went viral in 2017. It's called Wheels. And it's actually an advert, funnily enough, by a tire company in Canada. But the idea is there's a boy who's in a wheelchair and he can't play basketball.
First glance, he's the odd one out.
That's right. And he wants to play basketball with them, and it's obviously going to be a bit tricky. And so when he finally does go out, they all sit on makeshift contraptions, so with wheels on, so that they're all in the same situation as him, so that he can play. And that's a wonderful example of empathy.
Wonderful. It shows how empathetic students can be.
That's right. And, that would be a wonderful one to do in the classroom, because it's a twist at the end. You don't see that coming.
Yeah.
So it's really a very, very interesting little story.
I like the idea a lot.
So as far as empathy and intercultural competence and concern, I'd like to come back to that, because I think this is really one of the key things for the classroom, isn't it? I mean, intercultural competence is so key.
Essential, yeah.
And anything we can do to help students to really understand this other side, because when we're in intercultural situations, I mean, we've all been there where we haven't understood why another culture is as it is, perhaps. Why are the British so crazy about queuing, for instance? And I was wondering what techniques we can use to help students to really try and understand rather than criticize, to be more open and accepting. Would you have any tips for something like that?
Yeah. So one thing which is very important in the context of intercultural learning is, of course, to teach about different stereotypes. And stereotypes as being oversimplified ideas about a certain group of people, which often lead to large-scale ideas about the whole group, and which are not correct. And, for example, there are different stereotypes that pervade American notions of the Black family, like single motherhood, multiple fathers, dad not being there. And if we take, again, literature as a starting point, we could introduce The Hate U Give by Angie Thomas, and then shed some light on the way in which she, I'd say, eviscerates that myth of the dad who is not there, because in that story he's doing everything to lead and provide for his family. So it debunks that myth, and students then learn that stereotypes are oversimplified ideas.
Well, Andrea, it's been wonderful talking to you.
Same to you, Louise. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you so much for joining me today. And thanks for all those wonderful insights.
And thank you for your input.
Thank you.
Empathy is increasingly seen as a vital skill in the workplace and is positively related to job performance. It's a core component for effective collaboration and key for good communication. In addition, studies have shown that it's contagious and a key tool in the fight against inequality, prejudice, and racism. As former US President Barack Obama said at a student roundtable in 2009, learning to stand in somebody else's shoes, to see through their eyes, that's how peace begins. And it's up to you to make that happen. Thanks for listening.
Teaching English Today, The Four C's and Beyond by Louise Carlton-Gertsch was brought to you by Ernst Klett Sprachen, der Verlag für modernes Fremdsprachenlernen in Schule, Ausbildung, Universität und Erwachsenenbildung. Sprachenlernen fürs Leben.